You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll return to a conversation from about a year ago when we woke up to an orange sky, a stark reminder of the climate crisis.
It's easy to assume that we've entered a new normal now and that we maybe have some kind of sense of what these fires will be like. It's going to be like Reading, it'll be like paradise, it'll be like the fires that we're encountering this year. But I remember something that's always stuck with me is some other fire scientists I spoke to said, this is not the new normal, because that's assuming that the system has reached some kind of point of stability. And in fact, all we know right now is that the system is growing more and more unstable because of the way that we are altering the climate with carbon emissions.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Fires are devastating California again. The San Francisco Chronicle is tracking more than 10 blazes that firefighters are trying to completely contain. It's been almost a year since the sky turned orange over the Bay Area, hard to forget. And so much damage and loss has resulted from many wildfires in that time. We thought it was important at the time, and we still do, to keep in mind the link between the incredible severity of these fires and climate change. So today, we're returning to that topic with a discussion from almost exactly 1 year ago. The Civic team is taking some time as the show finishes up its second year to chart a path for our future and strategize around making this program the best it can be. So as we do that, you may see some more rebroadcast from us. There'll be conversations we found particularly moving or engaging, or ones that were just popular, and ones that are still relevant now, like this one. Just keep in mind, this was recorded in September of 2020, so some of the references to specific fires or events will be out of date.
My name is Alistair G. I'm an editor at The Guardian, and I am the co-author of the book Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy, about the 2018 campfire that destroyed the town of Paradise, California.
Which we have also had you on the program to talk about. So thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
So you and your co-author, Danny Anguiano, co-wrote a piece in late August about this wildfire and climate crisis. You wrote, there's an idea that when the climate crisis begins, we will know it. Movies present it as a moment when the world's weather suddenly turns apocalyptic. Winds howl, sea levels surge, capital cities are decimated. Well, the Bay Area woke up this morning to near darkness because of the smoke coverage. And so far, do you see around you people taking this as that moment when things turn apocalyptic, or are we pushing that idea away?
Well, I think that everyone feels that they're in a disaster movie right now. It seems everyone, all my friends, the kinds of things people are posting on social media, people certainly think they're in a movie like Independence Day or mm-hmm. Day After Tomorrow. I think whether or not this is translating into an acceptance that there is a clear climate change signal in this is another question. But the role of the climate crisis in these fires, fire scientists aren't disputing or debating it. They're clear about it. There is extreme dryness in vegetation across the West. We've had erratic weather with those thunderstorms a couple of weeks ago. And we have a landscape that, owing to extensive climate-related tree mortality, for one, is simply primed to burn. And I think it's remarkable. I was just looking at the list of the top 20 largest California wildfires, and the top one is one that we had in 2018 in Mendocino, but the next three are all fires in August 2020.
Wow.
In August 2020. And this is, you know, the top 20 in recorded California history. So we're really in a remarkable moment right now. And I've heard some scientists say that the extent of wildfire that we're seeing in the landscape across the American West, it reminds them of what they saw in 1910, when there were a series of iconic wildfires that really started our current era of the way we deal with wildfires, which is wildfire suppression. It really jump-started that idea that we have to tamp down on fires because they're getting very dangerous for humans. And so people are saying we're going back to that time now. So I think all the scientists that I've spoken to or just watching them comment online, all they can say is something along the lines of, wow, this is incredible.
Let's walk through those steps in a little bit more detail that you just mentioned. You talked about dry vegetation. In August, we had this fire siege, which was prompted or sparked by what I have been seeing described as a freak lightning storm. What does it take? What are the steps that get us to the point of having fire sieges and now again another round of, you know, two dozen fires burning all across California?
Well, as you mentioned, the previous round of fires, that fire siege, it was sparked when a tropical storm that was decaying in the Pacific, it cast off moisture in the direction of California, and that moisture interacted with the dry air over California, and it prompted this series of thousands and thousands of lightning strikes. And historically, lightning strikes, going back to prehistory, it is a way that wildfires have started in California. And those kinds of lightning ignited wildfires are really an integral part of California's landscape and have been for millennia. So in and of itself, a lightning sparked wildfire is not remarkable. But I think what was remarkable was that we saw these wildfires in all of the Bay Area counties, except for San Francisco, which is entirely urbanized. And they grew very large very quickly. And that's a common thing that we're seeing in these fires now, the rate at which they are growing. There's currently a fire burning just to the east, actually, of Paradise. It's burning near the town of Oroville, California. And that fire, virtually overnight, has grown up, has sparked from 0 acres to 150,000 acres, which is actually larger or about the same size as the campfire that destroyed Paradise itself. That's overnight. That's a remarkable rate of spread. If you look at satellite images, you can see it tearing along on its path towards Oroville. You know, there was a similar fire that threatened the town of Medford in Oregon and also raced down the I-5 corridor. And at one point, you know, the entire town of Medford was, there was concerns that the entire town would have to be evacuated. And those, that appears to have been averted right now. But the speed at which these fires are moving is helped by a wind event that's very common in California in the West in the fall. It's a downslope wind event when essentially air rushes down from the Great Basin over the Sierra Nevada and other mountain ranges. And these are the kinds of winds that are very, very dangerous for wildfires because they can spread them extremely quickly. It's exactly the kind of fire as the campfire. It's the same kind of winds that sparked the Oakland fire in 1991. Much of the West is enduring these kinds of wind events right now and just making the situation that much more dangerous.
So the wind propels the spread, and mm-hmm. we're seeing that pattern, you know, carry on or repeat. We've also got the fuel issue, right? I mean, something is burning, and it's not necessarily just forests. When we think of wildfires, a lot of people, I think of forests, but we've got all this vegetation that grows and then dries out and becomes fuel. And if I understand correctly, there's a sort of pattern or cycle there as well, which is linked to climate change. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so firstly, we have many, many dead trees on the landscape. Over 100 million trees died in the drought in the 2010s. And the head of CAL FIRE was recently pointing out that the epicenter of some of these fires is precisely the area where tree mortality was greatest in the Sierra Nevada. But another problem, as you mentioned, is the brush. It's not simply trees in and of itself. It's brush and undergrowth and grasses in the understory in California's chaparral regions. And the issue there is that for so long, we've been so good at suppressing wildfires in California. We put them out, obviously, because they endanger human life and property. That in lots of areas, this undergrowth has gotten really out of control. It's gotten too thick. It was said, for instance, in the 19th century that someone could ride a horse through a forest in the Sierra and it wouldn't be snagged on either side by vegetation. Well, now that's no longer the case in many places. Vegetation is thick. There are young saplings everywhere. And so the fact that weirdly enough, that we've been so good in many places at putting out fires means that this undergrowth has gotten out of control. And so that also does contribute to the rapid spread of fire.
Can you weigh in at all on this conversation about forest management, which sort of continually comes up when we talk about wildfires in California? And there seems to be a suggestion that California has not managed its forests well enough. And I was just earlier saying, you know, it's not just the forests, but like you say, there's a lot of dead trees. So there is, it sounds like, some element of that.
Well, the issue with logging is that logging targets the biggest trees, the thickest trees. And often when people talk about forest management, it seems to me another word for logging, essentially. And it is true that California's forests are thicker historically than they were in the 19th century and before. But it's also true that logging wouldn't necessarily help that, because logging would target precisely those large, most fire-resistant trees in the forest. The reason that, for instance, Native Americans, there was a tradition of setting prescribed burns, was because they knew that low-intensity fires wouldn't kill off the largest trees. It would simply burn the undergrowth, clear the landscape, make it easier to hunt there, would spur the regeneration of certain preferred plants. But logging, you know, is at the opposite end of that. It targets the largest trees. And there are even concerns that logging may make landscapes more prone to fire, because it leaves a lot of slash on the ground, a lot of the byproducts of logging. And it also leaves the younger, more slender trees that are themselves more susceptible to burning. So I don't think necessarily that the logging is the right answer, but I do agree that we do need to get better at forest management. And I think that may look a little bit like what Native Americans were doing in the 19th century and before, which is setting, for instance, prescribed burns, which are burns that are, we go out into the forest at a time when we are sure that the forest, that a fire won't burn out of control, possibly after there's been some rain. And we set low intensity fires that helps to clear out this thick undergrowth, which ensures that we won't have these very, very severe fires later on.
I want to talk about one more aspect of this, which is heat waves. From what I've read, it may not be so easy to directly link things like the lightning storms to climate change, although there's an argument to be made that extreme weather patterns have been attributed to climate change. But heat waves are directly linked and have been, you know, looked at in studies that show a connection between climate change and heat waves. And those really, from what I understand, exacerbate the conditions for wildfires to burn really intensely because of how they dry out the fuel. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, the state's four warmest years on record were all in the 2010s. You know, there was a stretch of 2014 to 2017 where we just saw record after record in terms of heat being broken. Temperature minimums in California, that is, the temperature lows, are now 2.3 degrees Fahrenheit higher than they were a century ago. So we are certainly seeing an increase in temperature in the state. And you're exactly right, though the primary effect of that is to draw moisture out of fuels and turn them into kindling. Another effect of heat is its effect on the Sierra snowpack. We see the snowpack, which is essential for providing moisture throughout the summer months when it melts off. We see that receding earlier than it has done historically. And that is also linked to the hotter conditions.
One thing that just strikes me that seems to also be striking a lot of fire and climate scientists is just the sheer intensity of this and how it just constantly seems to get worse. I mean, Cal Fire says California has seen a nearly 2,000% increase in the acres burned compared to this time last year. And you talked with Neil LaRoe, an atmospheric scientist, who told you he was watching the fires with incredulity.
Right.
Why? Where's the sense coming from that it just keeps, God, it just keeps exceeding our expectations, our predictions?
I think there was really a shift in the 2010s. I remember speaking with the former head of CAL FIRE, Ken Pimlott, and he began his role along with Jerry Brown in the early 2010s. And he said that he saw a shift to what he described as mega fires somewhere in the middle of his tenure. And that was about the time that we saw, for instance, a fire tornado in the town of Redding. We saw the campfire. We saw the largest fire in California, recorded California history, which was the Mendocino Complex fire up in Mendocino and other counties. And he said that there was a shift of which it seemed like we had just entered a new paradigm. And he watched that shift. And I think that's the paradigm we're in now. And I think what's so scary about the shift is that it's easy to assume that we've entered a new normal now and that we maybe have some kind of sense of what these fires will be like. It's going to be like Reading. It'll be like paradise. It'll be like the fires that we're encountering this year. But I remember something that's always stuck with me is some other fire scientists I spoke to said, this is not the new normal, because that's assuming that the system has reached some kind of point of stability. And in fact, all we know right now is that the system is growing more and more unstable because of the way that we are altering the climate with carbon emissions.
Right.
And so I think that's really the shift that we're seeing. We're seeing climate change have its signal is just getting stronger and stronger in these fires as the planet grows warmer. And so for me, that's the shift that we're seeing.
I mean, let's talk about the on-the-ground impacts of that shift. It's one thing to, from a scientific, academic reporting perspective, to note, I mean, this is astounding, and it just mm-hmm. keeps getting more unstable, and it's on this trend. But the other thing that stands out to me is how difficult it makes it to cope with it in a practical sense. I mean, you know, we're seeing just like firefighting forces being totally overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the situation in paradise. I think in the book that you and Danny wrote and in an earlier piece this year, you noted how well prepared actually paradise mm-hmm. was for the fires that it had known and that had been seen up to that point. But it could not possibly have been prepared as a town, as a community, for what ended up happening.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think... Yes, it's chilling. I think what's so striking to me with the current fires as well, I've just been watching how many small communities and towns have been wiped out. They're much smaller than Paradise, but there's the community of Blue Ridge, Oregon, Big Creek, California, Berry Creek, California. These are all small communities that reporting suggests have been wiped out or mostly wiped out or substantially, you know, wiped out in this current set of fires. So this trend of fires invading suburbanized or semi-urban communities and leveling them is one that I don't think Paradise was the last one. And to the question of preparedness, I think what we often fail to remember living in California, which is such a beautiful, naturally endowed, you know, endowed with this forests and wonderful mountains. We tend to forget that fire is really integral to this landscape. It might even be good to think of fire as something like rain. It's not something that we can avert. It's something that's going to happen. And we need to imagine that the landscape, in fact, needs fire. As one fire scientist put to me, fire's going to find a way in California because it's a landscape that's evolved with fire. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of preparing, I think we have to be prepared to leave on a moment's notice. I think what we're seeing now with these current fires, that they move with such speed that we have to have a go bag. We have to maybe think about it. If you live in a dangerous area, you have to think about it perhaps as you would earthquakes, have your documents in a bag, have gear that you can survive with, ready to be chucked in the trunk of your car. I think, as you say, it's just necessitating a new way of thinking about the kinds of threats that we face living in wild areas in California.
We'll get back to this conversation from September 2020 with Guardian US editor Alistair G. in just a moment. You've been listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. This conversation aired originally in September 2020. Our team is taking some time to chart a new path for the show as we enter our third year, and we're still interested in hearing your feedback. We do want to know how we can improve, so if you have 5 minutes, leave us your thoughts at surveymonkey.com/r/civiclisteners. And you can find that link in the show notes, too. Let's return to this conversation from last year with Alistair G. about the link between climate change and California's wildfires. Keep in mind, this interview is about a year old, and while the themes remain relevant, some of the references are out of date. You also wrote that climate messaging can imply that there's sort of a threshold that we'll cross, or that we can avoid crossing to avoid reaching a point of no return. I was reading in Technology Review that over the last 4 decades, higher temperatures and lower precipitation have already doubled the risk of extreme wildfire conditions in California in the fall. And unless we start cutting emissions significantly and soon, the odds could double again over the next decades. From the reporting that you've done on this, I mean, have we reached that point of no return? Are we there?
Well, I think scientists would always say it's never too late. Mm-hmm. But I think what's interesting is the way we understand what's happening around us. There's this wonderful concept of shifting baselines, and mm-hmm. it actually emerged from a fisheries scientist called Daniel Pauly. And he was observing the way that the oceans have really been degraded in the last century. He was observing that if you asked a fisheries researcher in 1900, who had been working in 1900, to look at the state of the oceans today, that person would just be dismayed at what had happened. They would see the degradation of a century. But if you asked a fisheries researcher who was working today and whose career maybe began 20 years ago, that person would have a much more diminished sense. They wouldn't quite understand perhaps how degraded the oceans were, simply because the baseline that they had is simply it's simply different. You know, they began working at a different time. Fisheries records going back many years aren't that great, and so their sense of what has been lost perhaps wouldn't be as great as that person who had been working 100 years ago and could see what happened today. There's this risk that we simply may not recognize the dangerous territory we're in, and how much worse it's getting, because we are simply growing used to it, like the proverbial frog in the boiling water. And Daniel Pauly might say that our baselines have shifted. As we go along, we're simply getting used to a degradation of the environment, and we are failing to see that we are at risk of losing something. And what we're at risk of losing is that Mediterranean climate that persisted in California throughout the 20th century, a time when fires we were substantially able to suppress them. And we may simply get used to this new state of affairs where fires are running out of control. And I find that concept of shifting baseline very helpful in thinking about the way we respond to climate change, because it may seem like, oh yes, there's going to be a dreadful drought at one point, and then we'll recognize that climate change is here. Climate change is already here. It's already influencing these fires. It's influencing a massive drought in the Southwest. It's influencing a myriad, a range of effects across the world. And yet there still persists doubt in many people's minds around what we're seeing, and perhaps an unwillingness to recognize that the change is already here.
To illustrate that idea of shifting baselines, you use this example of the passenger pigeon. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the passenger pigeon was at one point thought to be the most abundant bird in North America. And it was said that in the 19th century, you would see flocks of them so enormous that they would blot out the sun. They would be so loud that you wouldn't be able to hold a conversation once they were flying overhead. And no one knows about the passenger pigeon today, and that's because it went extinct, astonishingly. It was overhunted. It was its environment, its habitats were destroyed. And so in the 19th century, with these huge flocks of passenger pigeons, probably seemed impossible to imagine a world in which they didn't exist because they were so abundant. And yet here we are today. We have no conception that there was once these flocks of birds so big they blocked out the skies. Our baselines have simply shifted. We've simply grown up in a world where the passenger pigeon didn't exist. And we don't know how wonderful the thing is that we've lost, I think, is the point. The idea is that our baselines have shifted. Our baseline now is no passenger pigeon. We've lost the most abundant bird species in North America, and we don't mind it really because we never knew that it existed. That's the risk. We'll have kids growing up now in a world where these kinds of climate-inflected wildfires are normal, and they'll accept them. They'll accept this is simply normal. And the reality is that we've ruined the system. We've broken the system by putting so much carbon in the air. And the fear is that because the baselines have shifted, we'll simply forget that and we'll act as though this was always how it was. And I think that would be a very sad and dangerous thing.
Yeah, it's sort of a you can't miss what you've never had situation, right? Only on a cataclysmic scale.
Yeah.
So I think maybe what I'm asking is the wrong question. It's not really a question of have we reached a point of no return. That seems kind of irrelevant because if our baselines have shifted so much that we don't know what to return to, the real question is what should we be doing? What can be done given the state that we're in right now, the point that we're at right now?
Well, it's the obvious one, which sounds very hard to achieve, but it's rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. It is cutting our carbon emissions. I'm not going to say it's the Green New Deal or any other particular solution. I think we just need to do it whichever way we can. I think within California itself, going back to a regime of prescribed burns, allowing some fires that don't threaten human life or property to just burn their way wherever they will, because that'll be better for the environment. And I think it is also going to another level of preparedness. There was an excellent USA Today study from a year or two ago looking at how many towns in California had decent emergency evacuation plans. And in fact, towns like Paradise were in the minority for having such plans. So I think emergency preparedness as well is another area that we can focus on.
That was Alistair G., an editor for The Guardian and co-author of Fire in Paradise. This conversation aired originally in September 2020. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic,